Hi, I'm Dr. Howard Rankin, and welcome to The Miracle Within You, the show at the intersection of psychology, medicine, and spirituality that considers how the mind and body interact with each other to influence health and healing. With years of experience as a practicing psychologist in the health and wellness fields, and as a writer covering amazing stories of healing, I will explore with my guests how numerous factors influence our lives and our health. Thank you for listening. Welcome to this edition of The Miracle Within You. I'm Dr. Howard Rankin, and today I'm absolutely delighted to reconnect with a great academic, researcher, and friend, Dr. John Leaf, whose work probably, at least to me, is the most exciting research to read about the, if you'd like to call it, the miracle within us, which is the extremely complicated communication that goes on within all ourselves in amazing ways. You want to listen to this, you will be amazed. John, thank you so much for your time today.
Well, thank you for your kind words.
Yes. Well, I mean them. John has a book out now. It's been out for about 5 years, called The Secret Language of Cells. Amazing book. If you get a chance to get hold of it, I think you really need to. If you are really interested in understanding the human mind-body, because it does raise questions and some answers about this amazing complexity. So, John, as I said, no, it's 5 years since that your first book came out, and you're about to release a second book. Tell me kind of the basic research and what you have discovered. We've only got 45 minutes. So, what you have discovered, you know, over the last few years.
Well, just to summarize in one sentence, my other book, which is a basis for what I'm going to be writing. I'm a neuroscientist, so I naturally studied human brains and then realized the limits of explaining mind in human brains. We don't really know what that is. We don't understand what consciousness is. We don't understand what mind is, or how science and literature could be participated in by all kinds of minds at the same time, and the history of ideas as they change over time. Anyway, you can't find consciousness in a brain, unfortunately. So I searched through other brains, and I searched through animal brains, large whales, dolphins, and then smaller and smaller brains, to see how intelligent they were, and discovered insects, bees, ants, termites are just unbelievably intelligent. And you can see that work on my website, not in the book, because in the book, I went further into the fact that cells show intelligence. And the whole book gives 1,000 examples about how cells are intelligent. Now, at the time, it was a radical idea for the establishment that's very narrow-minded when you talk about what is intelligence in nature, where is mind in nature. But since there's no scientific proof or way to measure mind, certain elements don't like studying it, although clearly the Eastern science, Eastern religion has studied it but with internal methods, whereas our science for many years only wanted an external measurement, and now we're beginning to accept internal measurements largely through imaging and fMRIs, which I was explaining to Howard, unfortunately, are extremely speculative what we're finding about it. And the truth is, an fMRI measures the flow of blood in a region of 70,000 cells, one pixel of one dot of light in the MRI, like a pixel dot in the television, it measures whether blood is flowing in a region of 70,000 neurons. Now, we've then assume that means this relates to activity of the neuron, but the truth is neurons work in milliseconds, 1,000 times faster, And they are sending signals all over the brain in every region during that millisecond. So to say that the activity is here rather than all over is just not true. And it's been the basis of a lot of what neuroscience claims. So the bottom line is we don't know a lot. And I was looking at the behavior and activity of ants and termites and bees and shows how remarkably intelligent they are. You can just Google John Leaf and the bees or ants, I describe the thousand things that they do. But cells are in my book, and here I described how smart cells are. And then there are things called organelles, or organs in humans, and cells have organelles, which are their smaller organs. And these, one of them everyone knows is the mitochondria, which is a cell in and of itself. So the assumption is that a lot of the organelles are like cells and they show intelligent behavior. And my book went through that. And then my book ended up with a tease. At that time, 5 years ago, it was not respectable to say that cells were intelligent. Now, 5 years later, it is respectable. There's a cadre of maybe 10% of really respectable biologists who feel that you view evolution differently if the cell is intelligent. In other words, the intelligent cell is a participant in the evolution. It's not just a random thing happening to them, much like our behavior is a part affects what happens to us and our children and all kinds of things. Anyway, and there's a new field of biology that has sprouted with intelligent cells, which is called purposeful evolution. And again, these are highly respected individuals writing in the book, 20 people. Anyway, so, but the last chapter in my book was about a molecule, a very interesting molecule called mTOR, which turns out does a lot. And it's like it's so much that it's hard to explain how it does it. I've spent the last 5 years researching how it does it, and that's part of my great detail in my book about how this works. But what happens is that this molecule, pretty large molecule, and it has a complex of associated molecules. This constantly measures all the nutrients in the body, how many amino acids, how many sugars, how many lipids, how many nucleotides, and then works with an organelle that breaks it down and recycles, called a lysosome, and works with ribosomes and producing things. And it basically constantly figures out how much energy, how much material we have, and it gives signals. These signals are coming in, and the way it signals is it does actions on cascades of molecules that actually produce the results of making more proteins, making more lipids, making more nucleotides, or going the opposite way. You may have to shut down if there's not enough energy, if you have too many nutrients. And so this molecule is doing all of this. And so that's one of an example of what I'm writing about, intelligent molecules, what I call molecular creatures. And I'm sure I'll go to jail for this. But I was also going to jail for cellular intelligence 5 years ago. And I think when someone reads what they're doing, so I've written about motors. The miraculous things that these little motors do on microtubules, how intelligent these are. Unbelievable. They're signaling, they're going here, they're going there, they're participating in mental activities constantly, instantaneously. And mTOR is doing this vast metabolic signaling. So these are two. There are others. I'll be working on RNA viruses. And I discuss viruses in my book about how intelligent viruses are. Now, again, that's controversial. But if you, the border zones of what is life come up with viruses. There's a very good book by Carl Zimmer about what is life. And he very intelligently goes, he's a wonderful writer. He goes through, I'm not sure he would agree with everything I say, but I certainly like what he says. But anyway, he shows that every way you define life, like some people say, well, it's the ability to reproduce. Well, does that mean postmenopausal women aren't alive? I mean, because they can't reproduce. I mean, every definition becomes ridiculous in the extreme. And he goes through many definitions. And the truth is, it's impossible to define life. And you wonder this old thing about vitalism, is it something that was considered disreputable because it's the same carbon that's alive and that it supposedly isn't alive? And so, how do you make that jump? To me, if you assume that cells are intelligent, then how can molecules not be intelligent? Because
Intelligent, right.
what is it, just miraculously start? And that's what the brain people think. The brain materialists say that it's just a matter of the computer complexity that creates consciousness. Well, I think that's ridiculous, and that no one's ever going to prove that. And even though you could make robots and computers that could take over the world and kill us all, that doesn't mean that they're intelligent, independently intelligent. It just means they've been programmed to do
Do
that.
that. Yeah.
The
Yeah.
idea that the brain creates consciousness means that below the brain there's no consciousness. Well, logically, how can that be? So if you go down to cells, and clearly it has to go further. So I'm describing that. That's what my book
Wow. Yeah, amazing. Amazing. And also, of course, not only are these cells doing these incredible things, they are also communicating in unreal ways. The old notion of, well, they're just going down the synapses and all of that. Yeah, you showed that to be very misleading, even in your first book. Just tell the listeners to give them a couple minutes of how amazing the communication is between
Well,
these
I
cells.
focused on the language of cells, which mostly is, so it's all based on what we can study. And basically, we can study the chemicals. So cells clearly relate to chemicals, but they also have what's called gap junctions, where they just have electricity flowing between cells that send information somehow and back and forth. And then I wrote about vesicles, how they're sending information in little lipid things, and now there are nanotubes everywhere. These tiny little nanotubes. The microbes are communicating in the soil for inches with these nanotubes. Cancers make communities this way, and now it's been well proven that neurons do. And now, just this week, it was through dendrites. The dendrites, the tiny little places where they communicate with the axon, there are actually nanotubes between coming out, which makes the communication a thousand times more dense than the idea of the connectome of just being how the neurons are arranged. And of course, I've always said, and I've written about it, you can't describe the brain without the glia cells. And there now you've found ways that the astrocyte is vital for memory. Of course, the microglia are, and the microglia are communicating constantly. They're an immune cell, and so they're the resident immune cell. And in my book, I go through how you can't separate the brain and the immune system. They're really one system. One is I call the wired brain, and one is the unwired brain, the wireless brain. And it's because there's just constant communication. A white cell has is called from down in the foot to go to an infection in the arm. It travels up again, even against the blood flow, and signals are telling it where it is. It arrives at the place. The signals go back and forth. The cells open a space for it. It walks into that area. It's then signaling its own making. And finally, when the T cell arrives, the master it directs the activity, and the T cell is everywhere in the cell directing things. Like, why don't we, aren't we having terrible allergic reactions all the time with every piece of food we eat? Because there's all kinds of chemicals that we've never known. That's because there are intelligent T cells sitting there monitoring and they're taking instructions from the gut lining cell, and you can't separate the brain and
Brain,
the body. I make that very clear in the book.
it is absolutely made very clear that is a false distinction. This is an amazing, miraculous system, which you have done amazing work to show. Let's take a short break for this quick word from our great sponsors, and then we'll be right back with Dr. John Leaf and his amazing work.
The station that makes you feel good.
The cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise, elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to The Miracle Within You. Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Dr. John Leaf, who is the expert, I believe, in cellular communication, not your phone, but the amazing, amazing communication and functioning of the cells inside you, which makes up how you function. And earlier in the first section there, John, you were talking about some of the old ideas that really now have little value, but still persist in science and medicine and probably everywhere else about the mind body and what the brain does and, all of that. Is there a way of kind of summing that up in terms of where we are now, given this research?
Well, the real scientific research, even though some people are trying to destroy it now, but even with that, there's a huge amount of research going on that just takes us into smaller and smaller, able to see electrons, able to see what photons do. And by the way, a lot of the best research is being done in China. Used to be America and Europe, but really it's China is the leader in a lot of the most important research. And in really, I look into almost every field, but particularly solid state physics and polymers and cellular biology, very significant things going on in China. But with more and more gadgets that are at the level of photons, you can just see more and more action. And there's just so much more dynamic than we thought. Everything before was based upon slicing samples and therefore it looks dead. It looks like it's not moving. That's not the science. It's based upon the methods. So a lot of what, you know, through history, the brain has always been the most advanced science. So when you had the piano as the most advanced thing, it was a machine. When you have the computer as the most advanced thing, it's a computer. Whatever is the most advanced scientific thing, that's the mind, that's the brain in the model. But what happened is that materialism took over, and so you end up with a scientific academic community that is ruled by rigid materialism, and you have a society and life that has been sees beyond that and sees that the holistic view and the Eastern view, which is that the mind is a pre-existent. In the Western science, it starts with matter, and then it sort of creates energy. I don't know. We don't have a coherent view of that. Whereas in the Eastern view, the energy of the mind solidifies into vibrations and then waves and then into what we view as matter. But you can't prove that. So the problem is we're at the limits of what science, I stay with the limits of what science can prove. That's what I write about. So that what I'm writing about are facts. And that's enough to me. It's mind-blowing enough to break through the fact that materialism doesn't work, that there's so-called emergent things that are unexplainable at every level, at every scale. When you go up from atoms to, when you go up from the nucleus to the atom, there's stuff that you can't explain. When you go from the atom to molecules, you can't explain. When you go from molecules to cells, you can't explain, which is why a lot of these groups have to find trouble studying together, because there really are different truths. And of course, science, we have relativity, which is good at the huge scale. We have quantum mechanics, which is good at the small scale. And then you have Newtonian science at our scale. And they're all approximate. I mean, they're pretty good at that scale, but they don't explain the other side. There's one important idea that, I don't know, it's a little esoteric, but I think it's so critical. There was a guy named Gödel who was friends with Einstein. They used to wander around together, and Gödel was at Princeton with Einstein. And Einstein said, this guy is the smartest philosopher, logician, mathematician since Aristotle. Like, this is wow. The genius of a thousand mm-hmm. Genius. And what Gödel proved is that any thought, any system, any logic, any science is good up to a certain limit. And then at the edges, there are things you just don't know. And then you have another area over here that is true in that limit. But then, and there are holes where no system tells you anything. And Gödel strongly believed in intuition as seeing into those holes. So you have, you know, and he was talking about mathematical truth. Mm-hmm. He eventually committed suicide because it was so terrible to him.
Oh, really?
His view. Oh, gosh. But in any case, the same thing was proven. We forget this. Turing, the genius, mm-hmm. he was the equivalent of Gödel in the world of computer science. He proved the same thing, which is there are limits. So he basically proved the halting theorem, which is basically that any software you build, you really don't know how long it's going to operate and what's going to happen. By mathematical proof, you cannot that sort of like the uncertainty principle, where you cannot know what an electron's doing and how fast it's traveling. So there's inherent limits and uncertainty in our whole scientific view, and yet the materialism has shaped everything, and it's pretty good at making lasers and computers and TVs, but it's pretty bad at taking care of the world.
Mm-hmm. And
A lot of ways. And it's not very good at healing
No.
because it divides up the ideas of healing rather than the holistic view. Now, the problem is the holistic view is filled with what they call woo-woo, a lot of foolishness and a lot of, well, maybe not foolishness, maybe just wishful thinking. People who want to know, want to heal, clearly healing, magical, miracle healing occurs. We've all seen it, even though we can't produce
Explain it.
it, we can't guarantee it, but it happens. And cancers disappear, this happens, that happens, unexplainable things. And the body is way, my books show the body is so far beyond understanding that it's ridiculous. It's like light science. It's like, because I think we're going to find out that these cells are communicating with photons and with biophotonics and with just incredibly rapid electronic, because everything is electromagnetic. All matter, everything is related through electromagnetism. And maybe aspects of the mind are some form of other energy. Are they electromagnetic? Is the brain just an electromagnetic device? We don't know. It's all speculation. That's why I stay with science, because I guess I don't like unproven. I don't like to pin my hat on unproven things, but I don't know if I'm getting, there's just so much we don't know.
No. And of course, one of the features of the human brain is a desire to make it as simple and understandable as possible and create frameworks that. And then because we understand it that way, oh, that's the answer. Well, yes, within a certain limit is really what you're saying. And the more we understand, those frameworks will change. Hopefully, depending on the level of resistance there is, which is quite significant, but that's the evolution, isn't it, of science, you think?
Well, science has evolved. In other words, or at least the kind of hard, cold, materialistic science has gradually accumulated more and more abilities to look at things. Certainly, if you think of the Middle Ages and you think of the 1700s and the 1900s, and then you think of this century where all of quantum mechanics occurred in the early 1900s. And, they used to think the atom was a little solar system and all these quaint ideas. But having said that, modern science can solve the relationship of two bodies to each other. But when you add a third, like the rotation of the Earth and the Sun, we can calculate. The rotation of the Moon and the Earth, we can calculate. But when you have all three, we don't have the science yet to deal with that. Here we're dealing with a billion moving parts, trillions of moving parts. We're dealing with a mind made up of trillions of microbes contributing their minds to our trillions of cells, all combining together and working probably at the speed of light in some cases, other cases, the speed of chemicals, which is slow, or at the speed of nanotubes, or at the speed of vesicles, at the speed of all of this communication going on between all the cells. It's vast and dynamic.
And I think part of the issue, please correct me if you disagree, part of the issue is that the human brain is really, it can only focus on one thing at a time. And so it slips into the sort of binary, it's either this or that thinking. And I have this notion that, someday aliens will come and they can hold 50 things in their brain or equivalent at one time, and their thinking would be so exponentially different than humans, who really are in this rather limited, it's this or that comparison, without the ability to see so much difference in that. Does that make sense to you?
I don't know. I don't know. I look at the long time scientists of the mind are the 1,000 year studies of the meditators, and what you find through focusing the mind, and can do remarkable things. Crazy stuff like being able to Buddhist warming blankets, ice blankets, and control of the thermal aspects of the body and all that. But if you just think in terms of insight into nature, I think there's a lot, there's a huge amount of unexplored potential for the brain in the West. Unfortunately, in some parts of the East, for a long time, it was they weren't taking care of the material world, but now they're ahead, actually, in the material world. And I read a remarkable thing. I don't know how much your readers are into this, but this 2025's most major achievement from the Science magazine, they picked the major scientific achievement, is that for the very first time in history, this year, there's more worldwide alternative energy sources than the old fossil fuel destructive. Fossil fuel energy. So it's more than 50%. And most of that comes from China, where 90% of their, they have these massive solar things and wind farms. And I believe that science will help tremendously in getting us energy, like when we can tap nuclear energy again and in other new ways. And I have faith that the microbes will readjust the environment and everything to suit them, not to suit us. I don't know if it's going to suit humans, but it will adjust to the, they always have for the billions of years of life.
And again, the focus, you talked about it in scientific terms, the energy is such an important factor and concept here. When you're whatever you're looking at, it presumably is generating some level of energy, and the how well those different energy levels interact is important.
Well, that's why I was over my head. I was making believe I could read modern physics. I did study math. I was a math, almost had a degree in math. I have an undergraduate degree, almost had a graduate degree in math. So I know a little bit of math science. But I was fooling myself. So I'm now working with a phys you know a physicist to help me look at intelligence as it gets even smaller than my molecular clusters, which I'm going to show. Just like I showed cells are intelligent, I believe I can show that these molecular clusters are intelligent. And then what happens below that? And we're looking at energy, and of course, in physics, there's this thing called the quantum vacuum, and you wonder what that is and how that relates to consciousness.
Yeah, I'm just going to ask you about that, and that perhaps that's the discussion for the third section of the show when we talk about where do quantum mechanics fit in here, because that's an amazing topic too. So let's take another short break for our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movements and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to this edition of The Miracle Within You. Delighted to have with me the outstanding Dr. John Leaf, whose work on cellular, intracellular communication and how our bodies and minds really work, or advancing, let's put it that way, what we know about how they work is simply amazing. And I do believe this work is in itself a miracle within us. And one of the things, Dr. Leaf, that you talked about was quantum mechanics. And quantum mechanics certainly comes into play in this whole field of cellular activity and communication, right?
Well, yes. The problem is, as we said, you have the physicists working in their realm, you have the chemists working in their. I mean, when you look at the math involved in describing a hydrogen atom, like just the orbital of the one electron and the one proton, it's ridiculous. It's 30 pages of mathematics that gets crazier and crazier. And then you look at the next one, the two electrons. But then you look at oxygen and carbon, and you look at molecules. The quantum descriptions of those. Now, Linus Pauling was the one, he was the genius who said that this would explain chemistry, and he started doing that. And something strange happened along the way. What happened is Linus Pauling was just beginning to tell people about quantum chemistry when Watson and Crick stole the idea from Rosalind Russell about the DNA molecule and took credit and got Nobel Prizes and never credited her with the work. But anyway, what happened is that DNA was based upon what covalent bonds. These are bonds where electrons are shared between a molecule in a very deep way where they stick together fairly permanently. And what happened is because of that, and it was so fascinating, and it took over biology, that everything became only related to covalent bonds. And Linus Pauling is the one who was looking at quantum mechanics and saying, wait a minute, there's a thing called non-covalent bonds, which are smaller attractions and repulsions that will explain much of life, because a lot of life is dynamic movement of these molecules, and it's a dance. They're moving here, they're moving there, and this is explained through the non-covalent bonds. And of course, water is famous for hydrogen bonding, which is the most famous non-covalent bond. And it's there's a constant dance where water is connecting and then separating trillions of times a second, but it basically forms a structure. And it forms a very transient structure, but it's a structure. And there's these layers around every molecule of water. So the story of water is like unbelievable, and it's a quantum story. But having said that, the math involved in talking about water is like it's 100 pages of math. It doesn't make any sense to anyone. Wow. And so it's not something that you can easily talk about in an exact way. But having said that, clearly photons from the sun hit these chlorophyll in plants and in algae, and they do quantum things. They jump from here to here. They knock off electrons. They and they eventually trigger ATP. They also trigger creating carbon products, and so it all comes back to light and sun, which is purely quantum. And light is the image of God, of the mind, of the basic thing of everything is light, emanating either out there or with making Earth alive, or in our mind with light having to do with consciousness. And there's reason to think it is light. And that these are photons and electromagnetic fields and all kinds of things happening. And of course, we've tried to bring these ideas into medicine, and whenever anyone talked about electricity, up until recently, they were considered crazy and locked up. But now, mesmerism was magnetism. He was considered nuts. You know, vitalism is no good. All this stuff is no good. But the truth of the matter is that obviously there's electricity running everything in the body, and you're looking in fascia for meridians or for lines of electricity. Now, what's happening with the converging of the new science, there's all kinds of stimulation going on. So you have electric stimulation, you have magnetic stimulation, you have ultraviolet, infrared, and they're affecting living molecules. So we now know that this kind of communication is going on, and clearly this is how a lot is functioning, but we can't describe it. So basically, you have a quantum thing happening everywhere that is too complicated to describe in math. Therefore, you can't build a laser, you can't build a TV about it, you can't build a transistor about it yet. But science is getting better and better and better, unless, of course, we destroy it all, which looks like more and more likely. And we'll go back to the Dark Ages for a while, and then eventually come back to understanding light. So I don't know if that leads anywhere for what you're talking about, but quantum is the basis, it's described some things, like it describes why something's blue or red. That's quantum. It describes why methane, why oil heat burns, creates more CO2 and more greenhouse gases than gas. It explains how aromatic light sensing molecules work. It explains how reactions happen much faster than we would imagine by tunneling going on inside and by superposition going on. So it explains a lot, but not enough.
Right.
To make a coherent story. So then when people say, oh, I'm doing the quantum thing, who knows if they are or they're not? We don't know enough. We know that it's everywhere and in everything, and that the biophot probably... When I first wrote my book, an editor was going to destroy my book. They said, no, we don't want your book. We want you to describe all, every scientist and how they discovered these things. That's not what I was writing about. I was writing about the facts, the details. And then she said, well, you should have one chapter about this kind of communication, chemicals, and another chapter about nanotubes, another chapter about vesicles. I said, the chapter about chemicals would be 200 pages. The chapter about nanotubes would be a paragraph. We don't know anything about it yet. We're just beginning. And the one about photons would be a sentence. So I said, no, we can't do that. But we're learning more and more about nanotubes. Now maybe it'd be 2-3 pages versus 1,000 pages for chemicals. But the biophotons, so there are two converging groups of sciences happening right now. One is the micro level, where you have polymer science and you have active matter physics, where they're talking about active matter. And you have the quantum is one area. And then, but you're not allowed to say the body is quantum, because then you'll get arrested. But now we have proof that stimulating with, now, electric shock treatment is the first stimulation that made it, but it took 40 years of research to show how to do it well. But now you have 100 new methods. You have this kind of electricity, that kind of, you have TMS here, TMS there. You have infrared. You have 20 different electric shock modalities, 20 different new modalities, and they're in the infancy. We don't know. It's the Wild West, really.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You need years of research in each of them to show, but clearly all of these affect cells and all of these affect the brain. So you have the convergence of the macro stimulation stuff and the convergence of the micro, the nanotechnology, colloidal science, and active matter physics all converging with quantum. And you have, so you have the macro and the micro, huge amounts of scientists converging. But of course, scientists don't talk to people in other fields. So right. For example, the nanotechnology people are exactly the same as the polymer colloid people, but they won't talk to each other. The colloid people have been doing this from chemistry for 30 years, and the nanotechnology have been doing theirs for, and they consider themselves different, but they're really talking about small little motors and small little molecules, and it's the same. But whether they'll ever talk to each other, I don't know.
Really just, you know, fascinating stuff. It is really interesting how these divisions in disciplines and thought processes, you know, you're one of the few people that really try to understand the big picture. Whereas everyone is really delving into the very small part that they know about, and they think their model is the way to go. And that has some value in the beginning, but ultimately, as you rightly said, you know, it's out on its own. It's got to be integrated into all of these sciences.
It has to be very flexible, and we have to look at all the data coming in, but it's clearly showing that we live in a dynamic, life is a dynamic thing based somehow upon light, upon illumination, upon photons, upon electrical happenings, quantum happenings. Mitochondria clearly is doing that. The photosynthesis is clearly doing that. And we see it in ordinary clusters with chemical reactions, superposition there. So there's all kinds of quantum things happening that make us make these things that they call machines and motors, and I call intelligent molecular creatures. I think, I don't know, that's a term I'm liking more and more, but maybe I'll have it in my book, Molecular Creatures. It's definitely one that would bring ridicule from scientists.
That's okay. We don't mind ridicule. That's is about them, not you, right? So that's great. So again, for your listeners who have just been very interested in what Dr. Leaf has been saying, he has his book, The Secret Language of Cells, an amazing book that will give you kind of a basic understanding of where he is coming from, and a new book coming out sometime 2026, right? Do you think it'll be out this year?
Hopefully.
Yeah. We don't have a title for that yet.
With another writer. I don't know.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll have you back when the book is out so we can broadcast that too, because I'm sure it'll be illuminating and unbelievably exciting and brilliant and insightful. Thank you so much, John, for everything you do and for your time on the show here. It is revolutionary, I think, the work that you are doing.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's always great to talk with you, Howard.
Great. Okay. Get going on the book and we'll have you back when it's out. Take care.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Miracle Within You. Join me next time when I continue to explore the power of the mind-body and how it can be employed to enhance health and healing.